to me, Scotland feels a whole lot like Appalachia here. So, like, we're trying to minister to a relatively rural people who are struggling with lots of different sorts of mental health things, struggles with addiction, all that. And all that's the same over there, too, right?
The churches are closing. They're turning them into bars. Someone needs to come be a missionary to Scotland. I said, ooh, missionary to Scotland. I could get around that.
Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we're having conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those who've been affected by it as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. Today, we're going to have a conversation with Uplift President Andy Clements. We're going to be talking about a recent trip that she was able to have to the country of Scotland. While she was there, she was able to build connections with churches, faith-based organizations, and other governmental organizations that are helping address trauma, addiction, and recovery. I'm Tanner Clements, and I'm the Media and Training Director for Uplift Appalachia. All right, so I know, so you went to Scotland on ETSU's dime, which is pretty awesome. Why is ETSU sending people across to Scotland right now?
Well, ETSU has one global year program after another. And the next one that they have planned, or we're now into, is called Global Year Scotland. And so what that does is we focus on a particular country so that we can hopefully get students to study there, so we can have faculty make connections there, but also so we can bring some of that culture into teaching and whatever's going on campus. So there'll be events around campus that have to do with Scotland, but also people will be traveling back and forth doing projects. Several faculty proposed projects that were accepted in various different areas, and mine was one of those projects that was chosen.
And you've been to Scotland before, so you obviously were excited. I know, I remember you were very excited when it's like, oh, Scotland, I can work there. I know lots of people over there. What is it about Scotland that you've, you know, been so connected to for so many years?
Well, several years ago, Dale, your dad, my husband, and I both, through several events, decided to say, okay, God, wherever you want us, whatever, we'll sell the house, we'll go wherever. And almost instantaneously, our pastor at the time, or maybe had been shortly before, was in Scotland and just posted on Facebook, the churches are closing, they're turning them into bars, someone needs to come be a missionary to Scotland. I said, ooh, missionary to Scotland, I could get around that. So that didn't happen right then, but there was a chance to teach study abroad over there. And I ended up designing a class to teach study abroad and taught that over there in 2012 and 2013. And that's where I made some connections that were the jumping off point of this. Now, that's been 11 years since I taught the last class there.
Right. But I mean, you still made lots of relationships that I know, and you got to kind of reconnect with some people and that sort of thing. We're going to talk a little bit about some of those people hopefully that we got to reconnect with and all of that. But what, and I mean, we can kind of tie this off in a lot of different ways, but just going into it, to me, Scotland feels a whole lot like Appalachia here. So, like, we're trying to minister to a relatively rural people who are struggling with lots of different sorts of mental health things, struggles with addiction, all that. And all that's the same over there, too, right?
Yes, yes. It's amazing how it is very parallel, which is one of the reasons that ETSU focused on that. But if you look demographically, if you look geographically, if you look the degree to which the population is rural, mountainous, isolated, addicted to substances, so many parallels are there. And I'll say what you're eventually going to ask me what my project is. I'll just go ahead and tell you. We here at Uplift Appalachia are trying to mobilize churches to address addiction, and we do a lot of training in past adversity and what's called trauma-informed care or trauma-informed church, which has to do with understanding people's pasts may affect how they are going now. Well, Scotland is just a few years ago decided they want to become a trauma-informed country, one of the first countries to take this on as a country. And also they have the highest addiction rate in Europe. And so you've got those two things converging, which are the same things we're converging on here in a very similar area And I happen to speak the same language they do. And so all of those things made it very enticing for me to plan a project there.
So when they're talking about trauma informing their country, who are they talking about trying to trauma inform?
Well, as I read their materials, they really, and if people don't know that much about the United Kingdom, the UK is very, they would call themselves socialist. The healthcare is entirely government run. And so when they are talking about trauma informing the nation, and when I'm talking Scotland, which is Scotland is part of the UK, and Scotland is their healthcare is government run. And so most of what they're targeting is government services. So healthcare, prisons, any government services, but they don't really have any materials at this point covering the private sector, right, which could be businesses, but could also be the church,
yeah,
and some of education. Their education system is less government controlled than ours is. Their healthcare is more government controlled than ours is.
Right. Well, it's fascinating they aren't even considering that, right? It's like, of course, if we're going to talk about being trauma-informed, we're going to really focus on what really matters, which is our involvement in it, which is, I mean, I would say our country's trending in that direction a little bit too, where it's, let's let the professionals handle it and the masses can just kind of, you know, be made to feel comfortable in their own, doing their own thing. They don't have to worry about it. We've got it taken care of here from kind of this, you know, big government.
The
governmental apparatus is going to kind of help babysit us and take care of us and that sort of thing.
Yes.
But you lose a lot of that. A lot of what we talk about is the personal connection part. Like, you obviously are losing that kind of community that you're building. Your community is not so much the people around you, but so much the person that you're going to from the government who's helping make sure your needs are being met. And then you don't have a real relationship with them other than with the things that they're helping you with,
right,
which seems limited.
Basically, they're making sure our services treat people nicely.
So when you pair that with kind of that original vision of, hey, the churches are dying, they're being closed down and turned into bars, right?
Yes.
That sort of vision, like, obviously the faith community is not as strong there as we would want it to be. And there's this need for people to be trauma-informed. It seems like that's like the perfect blending of,
you know,
what we're wanting to do anyways.
Right.
So,
right.
Did you start by suggesting you want to help with trauma informing? Did you just say, I want to come in and trauma inform your country, but I also want to change the audience that you're trying to target? Or you want to take what they're wanting to do, jump off, and also supplement with some of what we're wanting to do?
I will say I would love it if at some point we are funded by their government to come help them. that may or may not happen. But what I did, well, let me speak a minute about the addiction piece too, because I studied their materials and looked at their push to trauma inform the country and looked to see if they had really included addressing addiction within that, which was not there. They had not connected those. I also looked at the addiction treatment. And a lot of that actually did have faith ties to a degree, where the trauma informing did not. There were faith ties there. And I did talk to people about that, and we can get into that when we talk some about what I found while I was there. But it's just helping connect some dots that we have begun to connect here, because we're trying to connect the faith community with the treatment community, with just regular people in churches that may not have any connection.
And for us coming from the belief that, you know, living the way that God designed our bodies to live within a Christian community, you know, in connection with our Creator, all of those things is going to actually provide a greater sense of healing than than just treatment on its own from a medical perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
And they are, because they are more of a socialist healthcare nation, they have been treating this medically, and we'll talk about that, but they're running out of money. And so it's like, this isn't working. We need something different, but they don't have a something different. It's like they haven't gone so far as to say, maybe we should do that. It's like they realize they need something different, but they don't have a something. And I think we have a something.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a beautiful metaphor for salvation anyways. You know, like, we just don't have the eyes to see the thing that's true in front of us. And so what we're trying to say is, let us help open your eyes to a different way of viewing this whole thing.
Absolutely.
Right. So the project you pitched through ETSU was really to just build connections with key players in Scotland to begin establishing a network whereby we could, you know, trauma-informed their whole country is essentially what it was. That's what you pitched.
Yes.
And then the ETSU connection to that will just be, because obviously you work with the Strong Brain Institute at ETSU, which is looking at ACEs and trauma and how all of that is impacted. So I think it's a perfectly logical connection for ETSU to have in helping to bring, you know, a different view of trauma-informed care over there. And I think that plays in really well with kind of what ETSU is wanting to do. And you're going to be able to connect people to that work from here and there.
And some of what they want is the research piece of it. And so this trip that I just took in the end of May, beginning of June, was more of a fact-finding research tour, not a tell people what to do yet tour. Because one of the things, and I'll use some of our trauma-informed lingo on that, is instead of going and telling somebody how to be different, you know, I've got the answer to fix your problems, the kind thing to do is be curious about what is already here and am I even seeing this correctly and what have you tried and so forth. So this was the...
What's happened up to this point that's gotten you into the state you're in?
Yeah. I want to know what is the lay of the land and be... we call it cultural humility, that we're just... I want to be humble about what I know and learn to start with, and then as we make those connections and see those trends... Then maybe we can work together toward just like we're saying we want to walk with someone out of addiction. Maybe our folks can walk with people in their country toward better solutions to some of the same issues.
Right. Yeah. And so I know when you were originally planning it, you were going to be there for a week, and then you realized that was not going to be nearly enough time. And so, what were the kinds of interactions and places you were trying to get yourself into so that you could have conversations with all the right players? And I know we're gonna talk about some of them, and we're gonna hear some of that. But what were the kinds of things that you were trying to find places?
So I wanted to find what the government is already doing and kind of where they are in their journey. I wanted to about trauma informing and also about treating addiction, and I wanted to find out where the church is involved and where they are not, and which of the churches are involved and which ones are not. Look specifically at some of the recovery community. And so some of the connections that I had before, and this goes back to the study abroad class, I had various people came and spoke to my class. The class was, Psychological Aspects of Humanitarian Aid. And the first year that I went, I was trying to get various different organizations, faith-based and not, to let my students participate in whatever they were doing as a way to have a humanitarian aid experience. And then we went and talked about, you know, what was going on, how did you feel, was it hard, those kinds of things. And so I made some connections just the year before. I did a site visit and made some connections. And then I got those people to help me set things up. Well, so various people came and spoke to my classes. One of the people that came and spoke was working with Edinburgh City Mission, which is in Scotland. And he was in recovery from alcoholism. And we just hit it off, became friends, and have stayed in touch on Facebook. Facebook is a great research tool. Stayed in touch over the years just as friends. But then when this opportunity came up, I said, oh, hey, would you be interested in helping me find some connections? And he just took it and ran with it and set up people for me to interview. He and his wife are both in recovery. And so he's living in the Scottish Highlands now. So darn if I had to spend a couple of days in the Highlands. And so then he had another connection who started an organization called Christian Recovery Scotland, put me in touch with him, and he took the rest of the days and filled them with people. And so most of the time I was there, I was talking with people in recovery communities and churches. I didn't really have connections to government folks, except that I did before I went. I did Zoom with a member of Scottish Parliament. And then they're one of the connections that I made while I was there is going to put me in touch with some more of the government people. So I did a lot more in the church and recovery arena on this trip, and still have more to do.
But you also got to go into a correctional facility as well, right?
Right. I did get to tour a prison. I did.
And learn a little bit about what that looks like.
That is true. And that actually, the governor of the prison, they call them governors there, the governor of the prison was actually sick that day, and so she didn't get to meet with me, but she is a Christian. And so she was very much about, oh, yes, come bring this on. She was sick, and so I met with the deputy governor, and he gave us the tour and had a great grasp of actual trauma-informed principles. He was talking about what they've been doing at the prison. Apparently, all the prisons are not that way, but this one, he gets it. And like, we did the tour.
You found the right
one. Yes. And he would show us how they have integrated that in their processes. Yeah. And even the way the long metal hallway was going to be brightened up and made a little less scary and depressing and things like that. But I also met the chaplain for the prison while I was there. And because I need more work, he is working on his doctorate, and I'm going to be directing his research project.
So. Well, there you go. You're not busy
so
enough.
Connections made.
You're not busy enough as it is. So let's just, I know you got to kind of sit down and talk to lots of different people.
Yes.
And I know you record a lot of those conversations. And to be honest, a lot of those conversations are not super high quality recordings. It's more for us to be able to go back and kind of remind ourselves what you're talking about. But I do think there were some things that you got to talk about with certain people that's really helpful for us to kind of hear and kind of revisit. So I want to talk to you about some of those conversations.
Sure.
And maybe we can play a couple of those clips. And I know we're talking low quality recording with thick Scottish accents, so there'll be a little bit of translation that probably has to happen on the back end, but more just to kind of get a better grasp of what people are dealing with, what people are working toward, and kind of where different people's hearts are and their motivations, but also just kind of get a clean picture of, what the state of, addiction and recovery in Scotland looks like and some of the people that are kind of at play in there. And I know one of the people that you talked to first was a pastor at a church in over there named Chris. Tell me a little bit about Chris.
Yes. Chris is a church planter in a housing scheme. We talk about government housing here. There they call that a housing scheme. And so it's a low-income neighborhood. And Chris planted a church in Mirkinch, which is in Inverness, Scotland, and talked with him a bit about his journey planting the church and what that is like day to day. Chris feels like it's really important to get the culture of the church built around what you want to be like.
Yeah, you need over 50% to inculcate culture.
Yeah.
So, because if not, you're pushing against the one that's already there. So that's why we always try. So there's a fifth Tuesday of the month, four times a year, and we use them as church family training days in the church. So we do stuff like contextualization. The last one was actually on trauma. We looked at the life of Joseph, and the main question we asked was, how come he wasn't bitter and broken by the end of his life?
Right.
Because that's generally what happens in the scheme, as people experience trauma and hurt, they become bitter and broken and isolated because they fall out with everyone because of that. And it was really challenging for the group, you know what I mean? So we do stuff like that, but that is all to inculcate culture of the church. That is a family that's healing, that's redemptive, that's aware of these things. But it's a lot of work.
Yes. But even the committing to do that work, you know, even the, okay, I'm going to commit.
Yeah.
Four Tuesdays a year, just that much, or five, two, however many it is, just committing the time to that is huge.
Our first convert, died from an overdose on Christmas Day. What happened to him was he had like a severe breakdown, fell out with all his family, became an alcoholic, came to church, became a Christian, was sober. And then the first Christmas when his family were going to come to his for a meal, they all cancelled last minute. So he went out and got two bottles of Buckfast and drank them, but he hadn't drunk in such a long time. His liver went into shock and he passed away in his sleep. I have had to explain to our church family that might be our ministry, like snatching people out of fire and the Lord taking them home. We need people like that in this game. Just roll up their sleeves and give of what they've got.
And I think like the last part that he said there is obviously it can be shocking. It can be striking to hear, you know, the reality of what his ministry looks like. But even just this, we're here to help people find salvation, not necessarily going to fix them. And I think that's such a big idea when you're, especially when you're talking about trauma and all these difficult things. I think a lot of times we just look at, have we successfully made people look like me yet? And that's not always going to be the case.
Right.
It's definitely a bigger lift. And so I think that perspective, and that perspective obviously comes from being in that community and really living there.
Right. And I think that also speaks to the urgency there, here, everywhere.
Right.
The urgency of, in regular church ministry, yes, you may have time with people and yes, you can walk them through classes or sign them up for next month or whatever. But in some of these really desperate situations and people particularly living with addictions here or there, wherever, it's a day-to-day whether somebody lives to the next day. And I think that's something that sometimes gets lost in all the preparation. And I want people to see the urgency that, yes, snatch them out of that fire.
Which is why we want the church to get involved, because, I mean, if we're talking purely from a governmental perspective, and we're just trying to trauma inform all of our government agencies, that's great. People are going to be served better by that. People are going to be helped more by that. But if your motivation isn't to save somebody, you know, from the brokenness of their whole, you know, soul,
right,
you know, if that's the piece that the church is able to add on top of that,
right, that no government agency
is going to handle. And that's and we're not expecting the, I mean, it would be amazing if all of a sudden the government was like, we want to make sure that people also know Jesus. Right. That'd be amazing. That'd be great.
Yeah, but, it'd be wonderful.
But we're not expecting that. That's what the church adds on top of.
Right.
The church needs to understand all of it as well. And I think sometimes the church can, like you said, lose that sense of urgency when you don't think, when we find ourselves not in a position where we're around people who could be dead by the next time we would see them.
Right.
You know, you lose that. And I think just that perspective that he's offering here is really eye-opening and hopefully a little bit shocking for some folks that maybe don't realize that that situation that he finds himself in, you can find within a mile of where we're recording this.
Absolutely.
Within a mile.
Within and probably, 100 feet of where we're recording.
And probably within a mile of your church, wherever you are.
Right.
True. Especially in especially in Appalachia, but all throughout our country right now. I mean, it's there. And the reality is that people are dying at an alarming rate wherever we are from things that the church ought to be so concerned they want to, you know, stick their nose in that business and really snatch people out. I love the way he says that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another relationship that you were working with was a guy named Billy and his wife, Jillian, who you had already known Billy, correct?
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about Billy and Jillian and what that relationship's like.
Okay. So Billy had come and talked to my class when I did the study abroad class years ago. And he talked about his struggles with alcohol, his alcoholism. He had been homeless for a while. And then he had been sober for a while, but not saved. And then fell off the wagon. And then eventually found Jesus. And that is when he actually got sober and stayed sober. And that's been, I think, 23 years now. And then his wife, he ended up marrying his wife. And she's been in recovery for somewhere close to that, a few years less, but they, both of them had very different paths to become dependent on alcohol. And one from early on, one from later.
Right. And I think the thing that, and we'll listen to a little bit of the conversation you had with them, but I think what to me really stands out is some of the realizations that he's able to offer as somebody who has found recovery, some of the things that he's been working through, but also her perspective on what even brought her into it in the first place. So let's listen to a little bit of what that sounded like when you had that conversation with them.
I've done a lot of things that I was ashamed of and still am ashamed of. I know that I found forgiveness and I don't feel the guilt that I had before, but and I also realised that, you know, I thought for a long time I was a bad person and that
for me, recovery was about a bad person becoming a good person, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do it. And it wasn't until I realised, or somebody said to me, Billy, it's not that you're a bad person, you're a sick person, mm-hmm. and you need to become well. And when I discovered that, you know, I realised that, that was the truth, and I did a lot of things under the influence of drugs and alcohol that I wouldn't do normally mm-hmm. because I was sick. And I think I realised quite early on that when the substances were taken away from me, the problem was still there because the problem was me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to deal with that, and I didn't know how to live my life in a healthy, normal, well, I don't like the word normal because I don't know what normal is, but in a healthy way, I never knew how to live my life.
In my teens, so I suppose this is like pretty predictable, so I developed an eating disorder in my teens through my 20s. So I had that, and I had depression, I had mental health problems, so depression, anxiety, eating disorders. And then when I was 31, 32, that then changed. I lifted my first drink of alcohol. And then it was like suddenly everything shifted. Mm-hmm. And then I became an alcoholic. I knew I had the problem and I knew I needed help and I wanted help. And I remember really quickly into my drinking, going and asking for help. And then nothing worked. Like, nothing worked. And I accepted that I would die mm-hmm. from it until I came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is what saved my life.
Yeah, the other thing that Jillian said right there at the end that really, I think, stands out in sort of a sad way to me, this isn't anything on her, and this isn't speaking ill of AA. She absolutely has found a wonderful community within AA. And I think that's amazing that that's been super helpful for her. But the fact that they have found their community, their tribe, only within AA. Not saying that AA is not a wonderful, helpful thing for some people who are finding recovery. But the fact they haven't been able to find that church community, I think, speaks to kind of the culture of the church in Scotland right now. And I think that happens a lot here, too.
Yes. Right? Yeah, absolutely. I think the it's that they got comfortable there, and I won't say stopped actively looking for a church community because that connection was being fed through AA. And both of them are believers, both of them are absolutely, you know, they do their quiet times and all of this stuff. They are trying to maintain that spiritual growth, but it's alongside the other, which is AA, because that's not really,
it's not the church
central,
that's not a problem necessarily with them, but it seems right. to reflect again a dying, inactive, maybe a little bit apathetic church
right.
that's not providing the space where somebody who is in recovery is able to find that same connection within the body of Christ. And these are people that are looking for that. They have learned how to seek out that community because they know that community is so important for them. And it's a shame that the church isn't really there for them at the time. And I know we hear this story happening over there, but that we hear that same story happening here too.
Yes.
You know, it's, well, you know, I tried the church and the church just didn't welcome me in the way that I wanted it to. And sometimes that's a selfish thing, but at the same time, it speaks to why the church needs to have this big, broad understanding of what people have gone through and the level of effort it's going to take to help people kind of find their way into, you know, that God-ordained, biblically-based, designed, you know, kind of community that we function best when we exist within it.
Right, right.
So after that, I know you had a busy day at the Christian Recovery Scotland Networking Day. What was that?
I did. So one of the people that I had made a connection with, who actually ended up setting up a lot of the interviews that I did while I was there, Stan Malloch, who runs Christian Recovery Scotland, which is an organization that's trying to pull together Christians that are interested in addressing recovery somehow. And it just so happened, and I don't think anything is a coincidence, so it wasn't that, that they were having a networking day for churches and treatment organizations and any Christian, anybody who is interested in addiction and recovery, on the first Saturday that I was there. And I was asked to speak at it, which was honoring and a little bit scary. But so they had several people from treatment organizations and other ministries that were there, and it was at a church. Another non-coincidence is when I had my class over there, one of the places that we worked with was a food box program, a food pantry, and the food pantry was at the church where this event was held. So I had already been to that church. Nothing to do with it. Different pastor, different everything, different organization in the exact same small church next to a housing scheme in Edinburgh, Scotland. So I was already very familiar with it. I had even been in the room that I spoke in. But.
So were there any major take-homes from that day, or themes or gaps that are being missed, or anything that you were noticing that day? Or
I don't know that I noticed themes or gaps yet. There were several organizations there. I think the several people in recovery who had been through some of the programs spoke. And I think the testimony of someone who has walked that journey and is now successful is still the most convincing, the most inspiring, whatever. You know, you have people that for years were in and out of jail and addicted for a decade or two, and now they're saved and flourishing and saying, come with me, let me show you how this can actually happen and healed. I mean, always, yes, you can have slips later and whatever, but for now, it's those people you think, I can never see them living any differently, and here they are.
Yeah.
Completely different.
There's a reason so much of the Bible calls us to look back at what we have been, right, to be reminded of what we're capable of, mm-hmm, and so we can see what God's been able to do in
absolutely
our lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really was a day of people giving glory to God for where they had come. It was like nothing. It's not because of this treatment or this program or this medication or this, you know, book or whatever.
God
it
working
was,
through.
It was God.
God working through
right
things.
Right.
Yeah. So, so obviously you got to talk. So what were the things that you got to talk about that maybe they were most excited to hear or were affected by?
Okay. Well, I was talking about what Uplift is doing. But what I ended up talking mostly about is something that we have not really talked about on this podcast yet much, but probably will. And that is the physiological, like actual physical underpinning of how past traumatic experiences set us up to later abuse drugs, talking about how our bodies make natural opioids, talk about the opioid crisis, make natural opioids, just because that's the way we're built. When we connect with people, when babies connect with their moms, or when people connect with the person they're in love with, or when you laugh at jokes, or when you run a marathon, our bodies make opioids that fill this need for opioids in our bodies. And so when we're neglected or abused or whatever, those are empty. We're not creating those. And so when an outside opioid comes in, some kind of drug, or even things that are not opioids, outside substances come in, we're hungry for them. And so it's very easy to become dependent on that because it feels like that love you didn't have, or it takes away that pain that you felt and so forth. And so I explained that. And one of the things that we're really interested in is that overlays so beautifully with God creating us to be with people and with Him. And so when you see the physical and you see the spiritual and you see the emotional and the psychological all overlaid with each other, it's like this picture is complete. In fact, that's what the pastor that was the host there, after I spoke, stood up and he said, I've just got to say this. And he gave this little mini series about this is the missing piece to my puzzle. It was the thing that you brought that I have not heard, and everyone needs to hear this. And so from that point on, every time I would talk to some group or interview somebody, and Stan Malik was there, the fellow that had set that day up, he'd say, tell them the thing, because right, he wanted the next people to hear about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, and you talk about how we feel neglect and stuff, those parts of our brains aren't being, you know, satisfied. But also, even for people who maybe didn't experience all those neglects, but then began experimenting even on their own, they're still numbing their own ability to produce that same, you know, internal opioid all the same. And they can find themselves in that same place where...
Right. As soon as you start taking the external substance, your body says, oh, that's there. I don't need to make any. And it stops. And so you make yourself hungry for the external.
And so instead of just continuing to medicate away that symptom, we're trying to see if we put people in a position where the church is providing a really intense level of community, an intense level, a level of community that people aren't going to actually want when they're in that situation, when they find right. themselves there, if that will begin to help kind of kickstart or restart those natural bodily functions that help us right. feel connected to humans and help people find recovery in a new kind of more holistic way.
Right. And it's going to take the church, because who else is going to so altruistically go out of their way to love people who are not even wanting it right
now? Who don't even want to connect right. because they have their own connection in whatever that substance is right. that has become their community.
Right.
Yeah. So I know this is a little bit of an aside, but obviously that's they're hearing the same things that we're saying we think we see, and they're saying we need this.
Yes.
And so I think it kind of speaks to how we're in the same place there and here.
Yes.
And so we can continue to kind of put these pieces together. We might can actually make a dent in this thing and actually, yes. you know, save some people.
And actually heal, not just treat symptoms, but treat the root of the problem.
And so speaking of that kind of connection being made to what we're trying to suggest, that really intense connection, just briefly, I know you talked about Bethany Christian Trust and how human connection, like actual community, has been so helpful for them, right?
Right. Yeah, I talked to a couple of people. One works with the men's program, one works with the women's program, and Sheila was talking about the importance of that connection with people.
And that's just, they're really special times getting to take people away. Sometimes people lived in Scotland their whole life and never been kind of north of Edinburgh and got right. this beautiful country. And just getting them out into the countryside and time just to buy fires and swimming in the lochs.
Uninterrupted time, isn't it?
Yeah, uninterrupted time. And it's so special and creating these memories for people that they've just, and experiences for people they've never had before. And just so much laughter. There's a lot of laughter as well as like, you know, conversate, like people, I feel like they kind of weep with those that weep and yeah, laugh with and celebrate with people as well. It's so mm-hmm. precious to get to know people and sometimes be the person that they're like, I need to tell you this thing that happened to me, like this really exciting thing. I got accepted onto this college course, or for the staff to be those people for those individuals is like a real privilege. They're real relationships, albeit they've got boundaries around them and there's, mm-hmm. They're provided by an organisation, they're real and they're genuine and to really care about the individuals that come in.
So I'm interested in how you choose your staff, because that's what I'm hearing. It's like, you've got to have people that love your residents.
Yeah, exactly. And in some ways you can't teach that.
Right.
Like,
right.
And I guess that, well, I'll talk for me and you can chip in, Dave, but like the common thing that we would look for assessment, like it's great if people have experience of working with people that have gone through addiction and people that have worked in homelessness, but actually more important than that would be the someone's faith mm-hmm. and their love of God and their love of people and ability to build relationships with people, be warm, be welcoming, mm-hmm. and that might be harder to teach, although you can teach mm-hmm. some things, but that kind yeah. of natural ability to connect with people would be what would be common for us, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, in hearing her passion, like what was your take home from your conversation with her really?
That there's a lot that needs to, I think people need to know things about it. I think a lot of it is that people just don't know. People don't know that they have choices. They don't see how even that the church has a role to play in this. And I think that is something that all of these brought in, that they have a lot of the same problems we do. There are some people that are ready to take this on, and being able to connect the right people with the passion and the resources and so forth is the same there and here. And I think also the folks that you see that are making strides are the ones that realize this is a spiritual issue. It is something that God is going to answer. And I think God is raising up all these people to work together. And I think we need to not be short-sighted and think, oh, we can fix this on our own, or the government can fix it.
Right. So it's like, and again, it's the same things that we're fighting here. Yes. We're starting at a position of, we just want to get awareness and knowledge out there, but also begin to ask the question, what if we looked at this a slightly different way?
Yes.
And what if we began to slowly change the culture? So I know, obviously, this was kind of an exploration trip. Get to know people. Ask a lot of questions. What's next for ETSU through your project with Scotland? But also, what do you hope that this could become?
I hope that we can... I would love to be able to extend the reach of Uplift Appalachia, not because it's Uplift Appalachia, but because I believe that God has really been directing us to see His heart for this, and to use biblical interpretations of the science and biblical views of the medicine, biblical views of the relationship. And I think that is what some people there want also. And I think if we could get kind of a consistent message, and also I just love people there, and I love it's a beautiful country, and it gives us
and the fact that they're already a little bit ahead in some aspects of where we are here, and we can kind of see how asking these right questions of the right people, we can kind of begin to demonstrate how effective, you know, having, like we say, an intrinsically motivated church.
Absolutely.
Doing this is going to make a big difference. And so I think it's a really cool opportunity. I think it's nice for people to be able to see it working. I think it's nice to be able to see that we're not the only ones that are struggling in this way sometimes. Just to have that connection of, we're not alone in the things that we're facing, and that there are people over there that want to help people there and here, and vice versa. We want to help people there, and we also want to get people here just as motivated to serve and help people find lives of flourishing, you know, here just as much.
Yes.
So I'm really excited about the potential of what it could become. And hopefully in the end, you know, Uplift Appalachia is helping grow Uplift Scotland, and Uplift Scotland is over here helping grow Uplift Appalachia. And it just becomes this amazing opportunity to see what God can do when we can motivate a church to really live the way that they're called to, and love and serve people in this really specific but so important way.
Intrinsically Motivated is an Uplift Appalachia podcast. Uplift Appalachia seeks to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing, and we believe that an intrinsically motivated church is the answer. To learn more, visit upliftappalachia.org.